Pickaxe.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back
to the
Triforce Podcast. High energy this morning. That's what I was going to say.
That's how we started. Just a kind of tentative. Hi.
You're right. Okay. Like you're meeting someone and you're not sure.
Well, this is how it would actually be. It'd be like this. Hi. Because you have to be further away.
Yeah, 2 meters away. You gotta be 2 meters away.
We're socially distancing very well. I mean, it's very over 100 miles to Bristol. I'm sure it's more like 170 maybe to Jersey.
We've been doing it for
something
years.
Like that. Yeah, we've been practicing.
We were doing it for.
We were born for this.
We were
ready.
Yeah. So we're in week 3 of the lockdown at the time of recording.
Yeah.
It's started to get to a few people going mad.
Some people are going nuts, yeah. I had a bit of a wobble like the other day, but it was just because I hadn't gone outside for like quite some time. You know, because you're not really meant to go outside. So I just haven't been going outside, like less than normal. So I thought, you know what? I got to get out. I got to go out and I got to like play some Frisbee with my kids or something. You know what I mean? So I did that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I felt a lot better for it.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing how much nature going out into nature. I read a study this week that said that people who spent more time with nature had higher like happiness and higher mental intelligence, their brains actually were working better, like and had more energy.
Yeah,
sometimes it's like an investment, like you put a bit of time into that, but you get more time out of it as well.
Yeah,
I get really sluggish and like slow when I'm at home all day. Maybe it's like a hibernation thing. Mm. I don't know.
Anyway, 200 miles to Jersey from my house.
So we're not supposed to go out, but you know they did say that it's okay if you have your daily exercise, which I obviously never have.
I wonder how life is for people who partake in the art of dogging, like public public dogging.
Hobby
I wonder
on how, hold. I'm going to say how
does that.
Is
I wonder
hold.
How that works out. Like now, there's got to be like a secret underground resistance of people sneaking out to do things that they would normally do outside.
Of
right?
course,
like,
yeah. And dogging must be one of those things.
How the hell are people buying drugs? Like for example, they have to. You know, they got to go out, and it's like. You know, it's hand-to-hand as well. There's no 2 meters when you're buying drugs. So, like, you know, there's definitely going to be some people out there.
It's a good point.
I think that's why they've had to put in some laws now, right? To say they've given cops more abilities now to arrest people when they think that they're breaking the laws of quarantine and stuff.
And they've
over
told drug
here,
dealers.
They've arrested 3 people. And one guy they arrested just for sitting in the park, not exercising.
Wow.
He was sitting on a bench in the park. There's got to be more to it than that. I don't think they just like swooped in with the helicopter and like cuffed him and like.
They got nothing else to do. I'm pretty sure they would.
They probably walked up to him and they're like, "Excuse me, sir, what are you doing?" He's like, "Fuck you!" You know, like and then probably dragged him in off the back of that.
But. This whole thing really has brought out all the little Hitlers who were in their little fields and, you know, all those awful CEOs and assholes and all those sort of people who. Running companies and getting on Skype and just being dicks to people. I don't know. Do you know what I mean? Or like laying people off. But also there's this whole thing, which about being only doing essential things or buying things that you can, you know, you think are essential. I talked about this last week, but there's been a lot of reports of people like people complaining about Easter eggs, like going into corner shops and being like, you can't sell Easter eggs, or like being behind someone in a shop and saying, you can't buy an Easter egg, or literally shop assistants being like, don't, you can't buy this because it's not essential, mate. It's not essential.
I bought a couple the other day.
You think you're going to die if you don't have that Easter egg, mate? Yeah, you think that's essential, dear? People are dying out there and you're eating a fucking Easter egg. How's that make you feel? Yeah. you're a dick, aren't you, mate? That's what they say. That's what they like. Right. They're like, I mean, we're not living in like Bear Grylls stuff, like essential, right? What is essential? It's obviously different to other people. I think avocados. I like avocados. Right. Are pretty essential for my happiness and my health.
Well,
right?
Nobody's going to stop you buying that. In fact, you'll probably go and you'll find that nobody else has bought any because they're gross. So exactly. More for you.
I like
yeah, them. But I'm not Bear Grylls, am I?
It's no, like, you're not.
Yeah.
No.
All right, shut down Sainsbury's. What's wrong with your own piss? Just drink that. Why just shut down the water? That's not essential, is it, mate? Everyone could have a few weeks without showering. It won't kill them. It's like, we're not trying to fucking like...
It's
like,
not a competition.
Everyone's, but there's tons of little Hitlers out there, all in their own little communities, being dicks for some reason.
Well, I mean that existed before the quarantine as well.
Yeah,
I
but think now they're empowered.
For a lot of people, that's just their nature, you know. And it's a shitty nature to be sure, but you know, it's just I guess now you're more likely to run up against them, sort of thing. Which is unfortunate. Nobody.
We
really
are
wants
in. It feels like that. Like obviously, if human life is sacred, don't get me wrong. I don't want people to die.
No.
Before I say what I'm about to say.
Oh, here we go. Laying the groundwork, just tilling the field like, before he sows like, his seeds of bollocks.
It does feel like a lot of people are not overreacting, but like I said, being unreasonable. On the grounds of it's killing people. Do you know what I mean? If you go outside, you know, to walk your dog or whatever, you're killing people. Do you know what I mean? You're people are dying because
you're spreading.
You were so selfish
you've done a
that
spread,
you had to go outside. And it's like, it's kind of, I get it, right? We need to guilt trip a lot of idiots into not going outside because, you know, they're having parties still and, you know, I walked through town yesterday and it was a nice sunny day because we're having this sort of mini heat wave and there's loads of people out, loads and loads of people out, like everywhere. There's tons of people all over the place enjoying the hot weather. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to, they were all keeping their distance from each other.
Yeah.
There were some little groups
of
people.
You got
your
little ticket book out and you were like walking up to them. Hey, well, what's this then? And you start writing the ticket.
Get a tape measure.
Yeah.
So. I see you've got an Easter egg there that you're sharing. Is that essential food? I think you could live off some dry Weetabix that you've got in the back of your cupboard, sir.
Nice.
Do you know what I mean? Like, anyway, so that's the thing. But I also watched The Big Short this week.
Oh, it's a great movie.
Which is a great movie about the financial crash of 2008 and some of the people who saw it coming. And there's this one kind of character in it who I think is supposed to be based on a real guy. It's Brad Pitt's character.
Oh, yeah.
And he is like a doomsday kind of guy.
Sure.
Who's gone off the grid a bit. And one of the statistics that he quotes, and I don't know whether it's true, is that, you know, if unemployment rises by 1%, 40,000 people will die.
They'll commit suicide.
In America. And I think it's more to do with just people, when they've lost their jobs, they get less money and they can't pay their mortgage, so they get made homeless, or they get, you know, they get they can't pay for proper food and proper diet, so they struggle, or they're in, you know, I don't, there's like hundreds of impacts of this that happens, right?
Yeah.
And so in a sense, like what I'm saying is fucking, if the shops are, I'm my feeling is if the shops are open and they're selling shit, you shouldn't go to that shop and not buy a fucking Easter egg. Just fucking, it's right there next to the other shit.
You,
like,
you buy one at the same time as essentials, like, though. I mean, if you're really struggling, you need to get around it. Go and buy, like, you know,
buy some milk. And
go
some
buy
Easter
a
egg.
Bunch of milk and then just like sneak an Easter egg in there as well. And then when they look at you, they're like, just say, it's just a guilty pleasure. You know, just like, you got to make light of some of these things. You know, you can't let these people
have
control
yourself
over
mentally
you.
Healthy. Because I think sometimes, like, you know, this is impactful too.
Yeah.
And also, let's keep the Easter egg. I'm saying the Easter egg industry is going to buoy up our economy.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone goes out there and buys an Easter egg.
Big
right
Easter
now.
Coming into full effect.
Yeah,
what we need.
Like big eggs.
That's what
the
we
egg
need
lobby.
In these troublesome times.
Very overpriced.
The thing I find, like with this, with the coronavirus and the lockdown and everything, it's so wide reaching and it's so all encompassing. Like it affects everybody. And I feel like it's all I talk about these days. And it's the same thing over and over and over and over again as well. So I vote, let's talk about this new video game, Valorant. Have you guys seen this? You guys seen the new Riot shooter game?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
Valorant.
It looks like a mobile game from 10 years ago. I don't understand the hype. I don't understand why.
Is it Overwatch?
It's Overwatch with CSGO elements. So it's like a cross between the two. Everyone on my chat keeps asking, when are you going to play Valorant? Never! I'm never going to play it.
There was over a million people watching people playing it yesterday. And I just don't get it. I feel like I'm old and I'm just missing out on something or whatever, but it just looks so utterly unappealing.
So like, you play CSGO all the time, PFLAX, and you play Overwatch every day. You two are the target audience for this.
Right, but here's my point.
Those games are like, they look good and they play well and they look like... They look like big budget titles. This game does not. It just looks like a free to play Chinese game.
Right.
Like,
people
from
say
10 years ago.
It's like CSGO and Overwatch. And I'm like, well, I don't like Overwatch. So why would I want to move from CSGO towards a kind of CSGO Overwatch hybrid? It would be like, I'm a football fan. And so someone came up with a game that's kind of like football, but kind of like golf. And I don't like golf. So why would I watch that when I've got football? So when I play a shooter, I play CSGO or I play Tarkov because those are games I like. I don't want something that's like a game I like crossed with a game I don't like because that's not a hybrid I'm interested in.
Well, another interesting aspect of this is that it has such high viewership, but it's artificially inflated because they're doing these drops. It's got drops enabled. So what they're doing is for the closed beta, you can get access to the closed beta via a drop on Twitch, right? So you have to link up your Riot account to your Twitch account, and then you have to watch streams that have drops enabled on it, and you have a chance for like a beta key to drop while you're watching, sort of thing. So it has like this like tremendous amount of viewership. Like I think Tarkov had the same thing recently. And I know like when Apex came out, you remember when Apex Legends came out, how big it was?
Yeah.
And it was really big for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
All the big streamers were pulling just these fucking godly numbers and stuff. But then it turned out that there was just millions and millions of dollars behind it. Like all
of
it was sponsored.
So if you just, it's like a catalyst. If you trigger it with a couple of big paid streamers, then everyone will see, oh, this is huge on Twitch. I'm playing it now because I want to get in on that viewership action. And it feeds itself.
It's crazy though. But you gotta like wonder how many people are there actually watching, or how many people are just like, you know, AFK while you know, they're hoping to get a drop or whatever, you know what I mean? They're just like leaving the stream on but not taking part in it, sort of thing. You know what I mean?
I mean, I know a lot of people that you just log in and just chill. My mate left his phone running overnight on the stream and got the drops.
Yeah, a lot of the time.
It's interesting, but it clearly it works. Like, you know, there's a lot of people being like exposed to this game, and like a lot of people seem to be going crazy for it. But I just don't get it. Like, it just doesn't look that great. Like, it doesn't look like it plays well. It could be completely wrong. Like, maybe if I try it out, I'll like it or something. But
there's a lot of players playing first-person shooters. I mean, Fortnite.
Yeah, it's the biggest genre, you know, right?
CSGO. Like even Call of Duty, the new thing. Also, even Minecraft. Think about
first-person
combat game. Yeah. And in a lot of
even Animal Crossing.
Up.
I mean, there's a lot of people playing that. Wild.
Yeah. I suppose. Yeah. I didn't think of it like that.
Oh, yeah.
Have you played any Animal Crossing?
No. I'm going to this weekend, though. I've promised my son that we're going to buy it. So the big thing was we went to the before like the lockdown and quarantine and stuff, we were in town and Animal Crossing had just come out. We went to the store and they were sold out of it. And my son was like, oh, you know, I really want to get it and stuff. And I was like, I know, but like, you know, sometimes it's good to wait for something. It's good to like look forward to something and wait for it. You know, like we live in this world now where you can just like buy something instantly, download it, you've got it or whatever. I think it'll be good for you to like wait for them to get like another copy and we'll come back, we'll get it. And then you have like, you know, you've got the box
like
and everything. It's like more tangible and stuff. And he's like, yeah, okay. Like he wasn't like too happy about it, but like he understood, like, or an 8-year-old to understand, it's like pretty good. But then, well, of course, the lockdown came in and all the stores are closed and everything now. So I just caved and I said, okay, well, we'll download it like on the weekend and we'll play it and stuff. So he's like shitting his pants. Like every time I go in the house, he's like, Dad, is it the weekend yet? It's like, no, it's Tuesday. Like, come on. He's like super excited. Can't wait to play Animal Crossing.
Our copy arrived yesterday.
Oh, nice.
It was my sister sent it to my eldest for her birthday present. And you can play it 4-player, I think, on the same TV. But the way it works is it's not split screen. So what happens is one person is like the leader and the others can just run around and collect stuff. And they can't even, there's a bunch of stuff they can't do, but you're basically like a little helper. But the stuff you collect goes into the village recycling bin. This is all stuff I read on some wiki. Like, I've never played.
You got 20 wikis open for that one?
Yeah. But Mrs. F loves it. Like, they were, all three of the ladies in my house were playing it yesterday. Actually, the dog and the cat weren't. So, of the five ladies in my house, three of them were. The human three. And they were playing it. And they were like, oh my God, this is so amazing. And it's the same kind of thing as I have when I see Valorant. I'm just like, just don't get it. Why are we just shaking a tree? She's just shaking a tree. And they're like, yeah, another piece of wood fell out. I was like, oh my God. Like, nice. I know people who love that game.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not gonna flame it. I'm just saying.
No.
It's the opposite of anything I'd ever want to play.
I mean, even with Valorant, like I'm flaming it, but I'm not really. Like, it's for me. It's my personal sort of take that, like, it just doesn't. But, like, I can understand why other people would find, you know, be hyped for it. But I'm just, like, I just feel left out because I don't feel, like, any sort of, like, hype around it whatsoever.
Yeah, no,
like,
I literally just don't care. So,
yeah.
No, I think, do you know what it is, though? I think for me, playing Animal Crossing has been a little bit like, I don't know, it's like, imagine, okay, this is a really, really weird example, but I went to Italy and had like some really nice, like, I don't know, fancy pasta at like authentic restaurant. And it was like, it was like nothing I'd ever had.
Right.
And it changed the way I thought about pasta. Right.
Okay.
And then I came back home and I had a Sainsbury's value pasta salad. Right.
And it wasn't the same.
And the person in front of me, or the person at lunch was eating it next to me and they were like, oh my God, have you tried this pasta salad? It's amazing. It's got chewy and it's got tomatoes in it. I've never had anything like this in my life. And Joey, they're like, they're like, what? I'm like, this is, no.
You fucking knew if I was in Italy 2 days ago. Actual Italy eating pasta, stupid. You suck.
I feel like with games, though, we've played, like, I don't know, we know what we like, but also we've played a lot of games, and also it feels like Animal Crossing is a kind of a Facebook game that we've played and got bored with years ago.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like, it to me, playing it, I understand that it's like this thing where you play for an hour a day and you slowly build up this thing and it's really cute and it's really heartwarming and it's really nice, especially for people in the lockdown who are like, want to create and build and stuff. And it's very safe. It's very friendly and it's very incredible amount of tools. You can, like, you know, customize everything. But yeah, it's like totally, totally awkward, totally slow, totally frustrating to control for me, you know, so kind of AFK gaming as well, right?
Yeah.
You could totally do like two other things while you're doing it.
Yeah.
You can watch TV and look after the kids while you're playing it. As you know, it's like this, not what I want out of a game in any way, shape or form. And the kind of games that I've tried to get away from actively over the last, you know, few years, those kind of games that hook you in and make you come back every day and don't have an end.
Yeah.
So they're very like skinning on you. I've tried to, like, this week, this month really, and the last couple of years, I've tried to play games that have an end. I played Metro Exodus this week. I really enjoyed it.
Nice.
I played What Remains of Edith Finch. I'd never played that before.
Oh,
I really enjoyed it.
I started playing that. I never got back around to it, but
it's only an hour and a half long.
I like games like that, like those, like, sort of mystery games. Did you ever play the Vanishing of Ethan Carter? That was a good one as well. I like that.
No, I never played that.
Oh, that's good.
I'll pick that up then. I've never played Gone Home, so I played that as well, and I quite liked that. Nice. So, you know, I've in this sort of lockdown, I've really enjoyed those experiences, and I've read a few comics and I've read a few books and I've played Animal Crossing because I felt like I had to. to be in on the hype. And I think that's been the least enjoyable thing I've done this week. Mm. So that's my review of Animal Crossing.
Nice review.
Take it or leave it.
Yeah, no, that sounds like a solid 9 out of 10.
However, I will say about Animal Crossing, it's a very nice social thing to do.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the time, you know, I'm on there and I'll be chatting to someone and they'll visit my island and I'll visit their island. And it's fun and it's cute. And I think there's been...
Yeah.
Certainly, I've seen some really good social experiences from it. So I think if you're feeling a bit lonely, Animal Crossing is a really great way to connect with people in this time.
Why, who have you been connecting with over Animal Crossing, pray tell?
Simon.
All right,
Simon's
okay.
been playing it right. a lot. He's built loads of really cool stuff.
Yeah.
He's got a really cool island. Nina's been playing it. But I've got like 20 people on my Switch friends list.
Helped them do some.
Yeah.
Some.
That was the first thing I did. I saw Animal Crossing. I added everyone to my friends list, and then I've been. Yeah. So that was a nice thing. But actually, I've been playing games with people on Tabletop Sim more. I did a Dead of Winter game. Did I tell you about that?
Yeah, I think you did.
Last
week.
Yeah, that was really
yeah,
fun.
He told us about that, didn't he? Didn't he, Pyrion? He told us.
Did I tell you about that?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Tabletop.
Yeah, he told us.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. You should do that. Tabletop sim.
Like sim.
It's good.
I find it too finicky. You know, you gotta like control the hand and pick up all the pieces and stuff like that. Like
it's very fiddly.
It's very fiddly.
You mean like you would have to if you were playing a board game?
Yeah, but when you're using your own hands in real life, obviously everything doesn't seem so fucking.
But imagine you know, it's like you're holding one of those grabby hands or whatever.
Yeah.
One of those long distance grabbers, and you're trying to. It's really awkward. Imagine if you had to like eat your pasta with like a grabby hand.
Yeah.
One of those litter picker.
It's like
things.
Even like VR. You know, when you pick things like. Up in VR, everything feels very like. It's cool, but it feels very labored and unnatural, right? Like it's not like.
Yeah.
Nothing beats your real hand.
Eventually, you know? What they need is like a pad.
I sex with it all the time. It's perfect.
That's true. I love my hand.
Yeah.
You need a pad that goes on the back of your hand that detects the finger movements. That's what you need.
And yeah, then you need like
your hand. Like you just slap it on there, strap it around the palm, and it can detect which of your fingers is moving and where your hand is. That would be ideal, rather than having to hold the controller and click buttons. That's the future.
Alert! Alert! Finger detected in anus. Alert! Alert! Code red. Oh man! Yeah, no. That
are
would
you
be
sure
good.
You want to insert that digit there, sir?
Oh,
are you sure you want to insert this toy car into your anus?
Are you sure your hamster will fit into your anus? God damn!
Oh, that is a fucking VR game waiting to happen.
That is
isn't it?
Definitely one waiting to happen. Yeah.
Butt insertion simulator.
Well, that's the big driver for all of this stuff. Will be porn, obviously, as it always is.
Yeah,
yeah, I hope so.
Force feedback controllers and all the rest of it. I mean, apparently, there's already. I was chatting to some mates of mine about you can do VR porn on Pornhub, and you sort of have to. I think you do that thing where you strap your phone to your eyes and you can look around and it's like, you know, you can look where you want.
Right.
It's like, I don't know how they've done it with some kind of 180-degree camera or something. I guess it would have some fisheye effects. I don't know. But, yeah.
I'm not sure of the technicalities, but actually...
They got like a Google car.
Yeah.
And they had like a load of...
just driving around
in
a couple,
hotel room. Yeah. A
couple of people having sex in the
all
Google
right,
cars
Mandy.
Going around and around them.
Spread them. We got the Google car here. We only got it for an hour. Come on.
Yeah, and there's all these hot girls like surrounding the Google car and kissing it and stuff. Mm. Ooh, getting a bit steamy.
Yeah,
I think it might be the heat wave, though.
It's all steamed up. Yeah, man.
There was a definite it's hot weather haze out this morning.
Yeah, yeah.
When
it's
I walked
nice
the dog
out.
About 9:30. I went out and there was like that slight funky haze that you get when it's warm and all the dew on the grass has evaporated very quickly and it sort of leaves this hanging slight mist.
It's good smell to it, isn't it? Yeah.
But my dog has a friend. Agnes has a friend called Luca. And Luca is about, well, probably 3 times the weight, maybe 4 times. She's a much bigger dog.
Right.
And longer. She's like some kind of spaniel or something. Like, what are they? Not a spaniel. What are they called? Yeah, like the big things. It doesn't look like a regular dog.
A St. Bernard.
No, no, no. It's right. It's like long and thin and just very hairy. Big floppy like a ears. No. How is no, a like Dachshund going to weigh four know. Times my dog? That's the biggest. That's like the sausage car one. That you see people drive, the hot dog car driving yeah. around. This, I'm talking about a dog. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It's a bigger dog. And
with floppy ears.
Right.
Sure.
And they saw each other. And they were like, oh, it's you! And they sort of ran towards each other like long-lost lovers. And they just started fighting, like yeah. play fighting, biting
sniffing
each other.
Other's butts
like
stuff,
Aggie
yeah.
is like hanging off the other dog. It's like, ah! They're running in circles. They're turning each other. They loved it. They were so happy. I thought it's nice that dogs have friends. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they see another dog and they're like, oh, it's that dog.
Yeah.
We're best friends. And they're playing for like 20 minutes. It was very
I sick. Was able to withstand the smell of this one's anus last time. I yeah. like this one. I like this
that's,
one.
That's literally how it works.
That's yeah. how we choose our partners too.
Butt smell.
Yeah. Well, we find someone whose butt smell we can withstand, I guess. Yeah. You know, if they've got really strong butt smell, then it's going to be like, maybe not. Maybe not for me. But someone, you know, like a smoker or someone would be perfect for them. You know, with no, they'll find
that'd be a Tinder profile. Strong butt smell. There probably is best paired with a heavy smoker.
I'm a matchmaker. That's all I'm saying. Yeah. You know, if you're in trouble, you know, if you've got some weird thing about you, I'll find someone for yeah. you. There'll be someone who'll put up with it.
Yeah,
someone with no sense of smell would be ideal.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. That's the way to do it. There was a bit on The Big Short yesterday where the main guy's got a glass eye and he's a bit
oh,
sort
yeah,
of
Michael
weird.
Burry. So the book yeah. is really good and. They did change quite a lot between the film and the book.
Yeah.
Because I'm a big fan of Michael Lewis, who he wrote Moneyball as well and a bunch of other books. Anyway,
I love all that stuff.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah. He just finds these great stories and these great characters. But yeah, the guy really did have a glass eye, and there were things in the film that they had to sort of, you know, dramatize. But the funny thing is because the film is very knowing, because at one point they turn to the camera and they say, okay, this didn't really happen. What happened was, and they sort of explain it. I don't know why.
And then sometimes they do the same thing where this did really happen.
Yeah, they say this
by
actually
the way,
happened.
Because some of the stuff's really interesting. Yeah. yeah.
But I like.
So, no, but yeah, he was on like a dating site or whatever, and he just put on there, like, I'm a guy, you know, I'm a medical doctor with £150,000 in student debt who doesn't want to work in the hospital.
Yeah, has, but a, glass
also has a glass eye.
Yeah. And the woman was and, like, I like your honesty.
Yeah, it's like, exactly, that was it. It's like, you're the exact person I'm looking for, someone who's honest.
I like that.
Which is, so there you go. It just shows that, you know, you can get away with anything yeah. if you're...
But that, honestly, if you haven't seen the film, I always see it on Netflix. It's very good. It's very tight. Like the way they filmed it, there's no baggy parts in the film. It's just a really good story. When they go down to Florida to look at the actual real estate crisis, like I remember before it, people telling me, oh, we've got to get in on this. And I had friends living in the States. They were like, oh yeah, we're buying all these houses. All you do is you buy them, you rent them out, and then you remortgage, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, this has to be crazy. Like, it sounds like a huge gamble.
It's not backed
it
up
can't
by anything,
be that simple.
Because the one scene that they do is he has like the character has like a stripper telling him that she's got five houses,
right. Anaconda, and he's like, okay, there's a bubble. Yeah, like I know people that did that kind of stuff.
Five houses.
Yeah,
jeez.
I mean, this was the way people were living. Like, you could get there was a guy. I think it's detailed in the book. They don't really mention it. They hinted it in the film. But there was they were giving loans to Mexican strawberry pickers,
right?
Who were making like $17,000 a year total. That's their total income for their family, and they were buying houses for like $500,000. And
yeah,
so
they were
some
called,
people
they were ninja
right,
loans,
so
no
income, no job,
income,
and they just
no
give
job.
Them a loan. So a lot of people said, "Oh well, this was clearly the fault of the mortgage underwriters and the people doing these mortgages in the first place." But here's the thing: these companies, that smaller companies, and little bit, well, I don't know what the equivalent of a building society is in the States, but anyway, you get the mortgage. So your mortgage broker sorts all that out. The whole point is they can then just sell that mortgage to the banks. The banks are buying them. So the idea, like the there's a supply and demand there. The big bank should have said, we're not touching this mortgage with a barge pole. It's full of holes. This guy's never going to make the repayments. But they didn't. They wanted these shitty mortgages just to stuff them in these bonds because then they can sell them. That's the whole point. It fell apart because the shitty loans were being bought by supposedly rock solid financial institutions that should have known better. So a lot of people point the finger at the middle guys and the lower end guys, but the fault has to rest with the ultimate profiteers of all this stuff, which is these huge banks.
Yeah.
And they didn't seem to know what the fuck they were doing. Like they just...
Well, a lot of the time they don't know what they're buying though as well. And so for example, what housing is, the classic example is like housing is very, very solid. You know, it'll get you like not very many gains, but like 1% maybe a year. Okay. And it's for so many years, it was a rock solid investment. Okay. And that means that what banks can do is they can take derivatives out, which means that, you know, from one $50 million mortgage bond, they can make $1 billion worth of investments with that one bond. You see, betting on it and then betting on it again and then betting on it again. And so that 1% a year becomes big profit.
Right, but who's taking the other side of that bet?
It's not making 1%. Well, exactly, somebody is. And that's how all the financial system is all kind of broken and weird and all split up in trillions of dollars of debt,
right?
And collateralized debt obligations.
It's mad.
Madness. Yeah, it's crazy, and it's all cryptic as well. So the film does a little bit of help to break down that deliberate like language that Wall Street used to hide all of the shit that they do, which is astonishing. So I mean, we're obviously in the midst of some economic crisis now, it feels like.
Oh, well, there's a big one coming.
Yeah,
I mean, they said that what could be coming looming. Is as bad as the Great Depression. Because it's obviously all this, the lockdown has caused a lot less international trade. So I think I was reading the other day that international trade, as a result of the 2008 crash, led to about a 10% reduction, between 7 and 10% reduction in international trade, because obviously you just don't need as much trade when, you know, you're not producing as much and people aren't buying as much and stuff like that. So this might be worse than like 20-25% reduction, which would be catastrophic.
But here we go.
Which would be catastrophic.
My feeling is that because we're all talking about that, we're the equivalent of taxi drivers. If we think there's a depression coming, that probably means there isn't.
Yeah,
that's true, yeah. I'm very like...
I've read articles about this saying how bad this could be. I mean, there might not be. You never know. We might just be able to recover. But it certainly doesn't feel like this is nothing. Like, you can't have an impact like this that just, oh, it's fine. Like, for one thing, if governments have to borrow huge amounts of money to cover everybody's backs while we're going through this, then governments are going to owe a shitload of money. And that's not a good thing. So I feel like regardless of what happens, that's taking
the wealth out of the future. So the way these governments are sort of printing money and selling these treasury bonds is they're taking future tax revenues to pay for it. So it's like the next 30 years worth of tax revenues are being invested into solving this crisis, which feels like a bit of a gamble. But I think, yeah, it's such a complicated and a really interesting world. You know, I was listening to a podcast about the stock market crash of 1987, which is Black Monday. And man, there's some like really, because that was when they were first having these computer sort of algorithms, you know, and that they were very basic, but also they kind of went a bit sort of haywire, and there weren't like sort of, you know, there weren't sort of any circuit breakers on the stock markets. There were these things called like stop loss orders. So basically, like as soon as a stock would fall a certain amount, the computers would sell, and so that would cause it to fall more, which would trigger more computers to sell as these stop loss orders. And so that's why the things now have if you're interested in all that stuff,
it's fascinating.
Look it up.
It's fascinating because they hold the planet's economy is essentially reliant hugely on these institutions in this small area. Like, if Wall Street tanks and everything goes to shit, everything goes to shit. Like, not just
for them.
It affects
the whole
everybody.
World.
It's so fucking stupid that it's so centralized like that. Bless you.
Gosh.
Man, you're allergic to the idea of bankers.
No, you know, it's weird. I have no allergies normally, but the past like 2-3 days I've been sneezing and like it's like hay fever, or it's like allergy season, right?
It is, exactly. Xylus has been absolutely sneezing his butt off,
just sneezing his tits right off.
It's a funny old time to I was thinking about that as well, P-Flex, earlier actually, the idea that you know, how are all the drug dealers going to get there? How are all the druggies going to get their fix and stuff?
Yeah, well, I think apparently they are, though.
Sips' claim was the drug dealers.
I was claiming that, yeah. But
I wonder what impacts we're going to see out of this. Are people just going to switch to, like, I don't know, a lot of people have already feel like, a lot of businesses have already, now they're able to work from home. Maybe they'll be more efficient.
Nah, a lot of people saying, oh, this is going to change things. Nah, we'll just get back to normal. That's it. We're not going to learn anything from this. That's historically been the case. Something like this happens, we learn nothing, we change nothing, and we're just like, oh, thank God we're back to normal. Even though with people, there are quite a few people who are a lot happier with things this way, you know, not having to fucking drag their asses all the way into the office when they could work from home. Nah, we just need you in. Nah, come on in. You know, we're going to go back to normal. People will learn nothing from this. That's our nature.
Yeah.
Do you reckon people will be healthier? I feel like everyone I've spoken to has done more exercise. I mean, I'm interested to hear what are people happier, like, working from home, like, than in the office, or like, at least temporarily. I think they probably
anyone
are,
who has a shitty commute.
Yeah.
Who tells you that they're happier going into the office is a lunatic and a liar. There's no way that people would rather spend an hour and a half each way dragging their asses into work or stuck in traffic. Everybody would much rather work from home. I'm sure of it. Why wouldn't you?
I think if anything, this will probably highlight the fact that working from home, more people could probably do it. And it would probably cut down on a lot of, like, congestion, traffic, pollution, all that kind of stuff as well.
Yeah.
And people will probably be happier, healthier for it and stuff too.
I mean, I feel like I'm even, like, just for some reason, eating healthier, doing a bit more exercise than I was, giving a bit more of a shit. I think it's because it's suddenly sunny as well outside. I just feel a lot better than I've been in the last few months.
Do you know what I think's made a big difference? Is that because we're not wasting so much time every day doing stuff that we just have to do, commuting, going into work, doing stuff in the office, staying a certain amount of time, even though, you know, you basically finished what you need to do that day, all that kind of stuff. Because people get up in the morning and they lack focus, they're filling that time with other stuff. And some of that stuff is really good for you. Like, they're just taking some time to think about yourself, trying to get into a routine yourself rather than have one forced on you.
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff has to be more healthy for people. But like we're not going to learn anything, Lewis.
Something different.
Nothing's going to change.
No.
Okay. Yeah.
You're probably right. I tend to agree with Flex here.
Like, I think it was better before. Don't get me wrong. I feel like, you know, is there some light out of this, or I feel like maybe it's not just shit for everyone.
You might have heard a small bird in the background there for a little bit.
Yeah.
I was going to say,
is that a small bird I hear in the background?
It is. It goes, but higher, and it sounds good, right?
Right.
It's a great tit, which I always think is a, I don't know who decided to call birds tits.
A bush tit.
But it is a great tit. I only have one great tit in my tree. I'm hoping I get a pair of great tits in the tree, but just one at the moment. But he sits in this tree every morning. I've been streaming. He sits there. Beep, 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 beep. And everybody's like, is that in the game? Or is that in T-Flex? He's gone.
I found a character in Mountain Blade Bannerlords called first name Para, P-E-R-A. Right. Yeah. Last name, Flatcakes.
Para Flatcakes.
That's amazing. Yeah. What a name, eh?
That reminded me
you were talking about tits. I thought I should mention that. That's a good one.
What a pair of flat cakes on this one, cakes. Huh?
Yeah. There's some happiness anyway. I don't know. It's hard not to talk about all this stuff. It's fucking crazy, really.
Yeah. It's, well, because like I said, it affects everybody like so much. You can't help but speak about it, right? Like, you know, do you notice that like when you are out and about, you're socially avoiding people, you notice that people are a lot nicer these days? Like, people say hello to you more and stuff like that. I think it's like because there's like all of a sudden everybody shares this common ground. Like, we're all going through this thing at the same time. So everybody's like, I don't know, happier to see people or just more up for like.
No, I don't think that's the case.
Oh, I've noticed that people are super nice all of a sudden.
It's the opposite. Like, I was walking in the park yesterday and there was like some guy doing like some groundwork there, and he sort of scowled at me a little bit. And I sort of was thinking, like, is he judging me because like I'm happily walking through a park. Mm. Am I not supposed to be in this park? You know, is he? So I was like, I didn't want to look like I was having a good time. So I instantly was like, oh, you know, better up my pace, look like I'm doing my daily exercise or whatever, because I don't want him to judge me for, you know, breaking rules. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like there's this atmosphere of everyone is like, oh, you know, better not look like I'm having a good time out there because, you know, got to take it all very seriously, you know, stiff upper lip and all that. It's very much that kind of war mentality out there. It doesn't feel like everyone's actually having a happy, good time.
Agreed.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So I don't know what it's like on Jersey, but maybe.
I don't know. Like, I think it's not bad. Like I said, people just seem to be more friendly, you know, like. They give you sort of like a knowing hello or like a smile or whatever, because I think everybody just realizes, hang on, like, this sucks for everybody sort of thing.
Yeah. And it's been a bit of pulling together, I guess.
Yeah, it feels like it anyway. I don't know. Maybe
I saw a couple of kids, a couple of like families, like two parents out with their kids, and their kids were like, talking through a fence.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It felt like they were, like, families were not, like, wanted to make friends and talk to people, or maybe talk to someone they knew already, but they weren't allowed to, like, because there was a little gap between the fence, like, because it was like a railway line. And so they were, like, talking across this little area. And I thought that's, like, a really good example of people
talking through a railway line.
Like not wanting to get, you know, because they're outside. They don't want to get seen by anyone. They don't want to get in trouble. They want to follow the rules. And they've got their kid running around or whatever. And they're like, don't get too close to the fence, you know? Like, I don't know. It must be tough for people with kids as well.
They're pretty adaptive.
My son was playing Minecraft on his Switch whilst FaceTiming his friend, who was also playing Minecraft on his Switch, but they weren't playing together. Like, they were just like playing together through FaceTime sort of thing, but like not connecting to the same server or whatever. And like, normally he wouldn't have time to do that, but because, you know, he's like out of school and stuff, and my wife is like, oh, well, he needs, like, you know, he misses his friends. He needs to have like some time with his friends. That's the only way that he can have time with his friends. It's a bit weird.
Like, that sounds like
it's cute, but it's weird.
What we used to do for 10 years playing WoW.
Yeah, pretty much.
Or half of these board games
we were basically just playing
our own game, like, with minimal interaction with other people. A lot of the board games I play now, you're basically like solo building a fucking town or something, or, you know, and occasionally you'll maybe look at someone else's and be like, oh, nice temple you got there. I'm going to destroy it. You know, and they're like, oh. And then, like, that's the interaction for, like, that's like the only interaction you have in half an hour.
Nice.
Other to tell people what you're doing so you're not cheating, you know.
Kids are pretty adaptable, you know.
They are pretty adaptable, yeah.
Like, have you ever heard of Brené Brown? She did some TED Talks. I know you love TED Talks, Lewis. If you look up some of hers, they're really good.
Not really a fan. I found them so boring.
Well, like, her talking about feelings.
There must be
and
good
stuff.
Ones in there. It might be like what we said with podcasts last week. Some of them are obviously good if they got good people, but some of them are just terrible people.
Well, she did one about kids and how they're essentially hardwired for struggle. And that's true, because I've noticed that kids in pretty much any situation seem to be pretty much the same. Like, some of them may be, they conceal their sadness pretty well. They get on with things. Every day they wake up, it seems like a whole brand new adventure, and they've got this optimism in the morning and stuff. And I'm pretty sure that most people's kids, although they might be losing their minds occasionally, are adapting way better than grown-ups are. Like, they're way more
adaptable.
Oh, for
sure, yeah. Like, well, I mean, it's a common thing for grown-ups to place, like, grown-up values onto children who have no concept of grown-up values, right?
Right.
Like, kids are very adaptable because they don't know any better. They have no... They haven't developed any sense of, like, responsibility for anything. You know what I mean? They're very much sort of I wake up, I exist, I'm waiting for
they're
my parents
slate.
To, like, sort things out for me and stuff.
They don't have all the cultural biases that had forced into us.
Also, they don't have expectations. Or, like, if you think about the life of a kid, they're presented with very few options. The situation they're in, they have very little power to change it.
Yeah.
So I think genetically speaking, kids are pretty much, the whole point is, however rough it is, you're going to be pretty much the same regardless, you'd hope. I mean, some kids obviously go through a lot worse and are not the same, but certainly very little kids, I feel like it doesn't really matter how rough things are. They'll be optimistic, and they'll be the same. They'll be kids, which is amazing.
Yeah.
But so they have very little agency, and they just accept their situation. They're just like, okay, well, my toy is now a stick and a hoop or whatever, and you know that's pretty much it. They don't sit there pining for greater. They're just pretty much happy with what they've got. So I think it is sometimes good to look to the children. Look to the children for inspiration.
Well, yeah, I mean, yes and no, because it's...
Because we're just big children.
Yeah, but I mean, we in a lot of cases, know better as well, right? Like, it's impossible to capture that, the essence of a child, because there's elements of that are just impossible for adults to...
Because we've seen good and we've seen bad. Yeah. They've only ever seen whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, to them, this is the situation.
Yeah.
They don't... they haven't got the experience yet to think, wow, these are some rough times.
Yeah,
you know? I see.
They don't get it. Like, if my wife takes my kids, like, out for, like, their daily walk or whatever, she's like, okay, you gotta be careful. You can't go near anyone. And they sort of understand that, but they completely forget themselves all the time.
Oh,
because they've been conditioned to... Like my kids, I don't know if like your kids are like this, but my kids are naturally very sort of like reserved around people they don't know anyway. So they would never like run up to a stranger or be anywhere near other people anyway. You know what I mean?
It took years to get them to, you know, in some supermarkets, there's a little tokens that you can get. They do this in Waitrose anyway. You have a little, when you go to the checkout, you can ask the checkout lady or fella, can I have some of the green tokens? And you put them in a charity box.
Yeah.
And whichever one has the most in, that gets the lion's share of the charity money that week and blah, blah, blah. So you basically vote, using the tokens to vote for which charity. It took my youngest until she was about 7 before she mustered up the courage to say, can I please have some green tokens? Like, she would just silently wait and hope the lady offered.
Yeah.
And if they didn't offer, she didn't get. And I'd say to her, I'd say to her, if you don't ask, you don't get. Like, you got to ask. She's like, I want the turkey.
But I'm the same way now with so many things in my life like that. I won't ask someone because it's awkward. I'm sure loads of people are like that as well. We are just big kids.
Right. But it's not a good way to be. You've got to try and break out of the being afraid of talking to people, because it's fundamental to human existence. If she's scared to ask for a green token, what else is she? Is she going to be afraid to ask for a raise, Lewis?
Is she going to be afraid to phone 911 in an emergency?
Yeah, the fire's just burning out of control. She's nervous about the phone call.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Like, you have to get over these things. I think you're
right
about
kids. You have to get over them,
but
you don't have to get over them when you're a small kid. You know what I mean?
Like, I'm trying to enforce this.
You got plenty
of
time
to be courageous in your interactions with other people. You've got to be.
Yeah.
And if you need to find a coping mechanism for that, or you're panicking inside, you've got to learn how to put on a front, do what you got to do. Because believe me, talking in front of anything more than 2 or 3 people used to terrify me. But I just forced myself to do it. And I would panic inside and just try and get on with it on the outside. And after a while, you learn that you don't explode when you're nervous on the inside, and you can get over it. And I think, you know, if you teach your kids nice and early on that talking to other people is not something to be embarrassed about or shameful, you don't need to be scared. Like I always say to people when they're worried about fucking up in front of other people, everybody's rooting for you to succeed, you know? Everybody on the inside just wants a perfectly normal interaction where there's no embarrassment or cringe. Everybody wants you to do well. If you're talking to someone, they don't want the conversation to be awkward. They're not expecting it to be awkward. They hope you have, you know, that you can speak normally.
Yeah.
So don't worry. They're not hoping you fail. They're hoping the opposite.
I always think that, like, a smile goes a long way to actually towards people. So many people, you never fucking smile. And in fact, in some cultures, it's really interesting. They actually, like, I was reading about this guy who lives in, I think it's like Georgia, with the Russian sort of, on the south of Russia. And people there, he moved there, and I think he met a woman there, moved there. And apparently that in that culture, they just are not very smiley, naturally. They don't smile out in public, but even though they're quite happy and quite jolly and friendly and will make jokes and stuff and are friendly, very friendly people, but it's like a cultural thing where they don't really smile. And in America, it's a very fakey, you know, waitressy kind of, or server, like, oh, you know, smile for your tips, fakeness. And that's not what I'm talking about. But certainly in the UK, we're not necessarily very upbeat people naturally. But I think it's very nice to have a genuine, just to smile at someone, when you're out, you know, or be nice to someone.
How are you? Oh my God. How are you doing? Like,
yeah. Oh, fuck. Sorry.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was thinking about that kid thing you were saying. If you let like your kids just do whatever the fuck they want, they're going to eat ice cream every day and just ruin themselves. I guess being a parent is a little bit like having your kid join the army and he's got this habit formed rote thing where every day it's and people in the army are not necessarily unhappy. They do have a very rigorous, like, regimented life of habits and things, and I don't think it's psychologically very good because it's a little bit controlling, but I think it is, like, people get used to it and they don't hate it. They're not incredibly, it's not like they're in prison where it's kind of this torture that they have to go through. It certainly feels quite nice to have this rigorous plan to your life where you're not doing things that are bad for you. And we obviously have to do that as adults. We have to, like, watch our own diet and clean our teeth and wear clean clothes and keep the house tidy and all this shit all the time. And it's fucking like, ugh, you know. But and also we have to exercise, which we don't really want to do. We have to, like, sleep properly and not stay up too late.
Oh, man.
You know, there's so many things we have to do all the time. And I don't think that you should, you know, feel bad if you don't do all of those things. But it is positive to try and get them done. And I always feel better when I've done it. Like, it's like, I really don't want to tidy up, but once I have had it, like, clean the house, I'm like, man, I feel like this weight off my shoulders that I've done it. I don't know. I think we, as adults, we have to police our own brain. And one of the things I found myself doing, for example, which I shouldn't do as much, is I've just been really addicted to, like, checking the news. And that's, like, a really bad thing to do. Like, because of this coronavirus, I've just been so morbidly fascinated with it. I'm just sort of scouring, regularly checking, like, different news sites,
yeah,
for, like, updates and things. Like, listening to the news and being involved in the news a lot more than I have ever been. And I've noticed it this week, and I've tried to cut it off because it's not a positive thing. And I'm not, it's like, I can't change it. It's all negative. It's just the same negative stuff. And it's not giving me any, like, it's not making me feel better. I'm not trying to hide from it, the reality, but it's not like a positive thing. No. So anyway, that's something which I noticed I was doing, which I shouldn't be doing.
Don't be hard on yourself.
I mean, it's the way that it goes sometimes, like, with this stuff, you know, like, you can't, like, there's definitely, like, an element of, well, human nature with all this, isn't it? Like, we are morbidly fascinated with things, and, like, our brain is, like, addicted to, like, in some ways, things that make you, like, uncomfortable, or things that, like, you know, might, like, make you feel anxious or whatever. Like it tries to trick you all the time, and it's, like, it's up to you to trick it into, you know, doing positive things instead and focusing on other things that will actually make you happy and not just make you miserable, sort of thing.
I wonder what the chemical effect of being freaked out by the news is and why we keep coming back for more. Because apparently that's very successful. You know what I mean? Most of these news corporations now, it all has to be breaking news and fear, fear, fear.
I think it's a control
thing.
Why
are we addicted to that?
I think the more we read about it, the more we can distance ourselves from it and make ourselves feel better that it'll never affect us, sort of thing. You
but
know
people
what I mean?
Watch this stuff on the news. Maybe. That they think is affecting them directly, and they're terrified of it, and they adjust their behavior accordingly. I mean, you only have to look at the panic buying stuff. People took that very seriously.
Yeah.
So what is it about? What is happening in our brains when we see news stories? And if you look at the way the news is now compared to the way it was 30 years ago, say, it's very sensationalized. It's very scary. All these spinning graphics. I mean, the brass eye used to take it off perfectly, where it was just like, it's trying to make you scared all the time. And that's especially in America, the news is really, really terrifying. It feels like there's bank robbers and murderers around every corner and everything's going to shit. And oh, my God.
Yeah.
And then they'll have a water skiing squirrel or something at the end. But most of the stuff is terrifying. Why are we addicted to that? Why are we addicted to being scared by the news and news in general, which seems like everyone wants to read negative stories and
it
and
must tap
story.
Into something more primal.
I'm very interested,
you know,
to find out what that is. Anyone that listens to this, yeah, if you have a source, I would love to read it.
If you're smarter than us, please shout us on Twitter.
Oh, poor, my poor Fitbit. I feel like I'm tricking this poor thing every day. When I'm gesticulating wildly talking, it just congratulated me on 250 steps. So, yeah.
250 steps. Oh, that's good. That's good. Oh my God, 250. You've got to do like 10,000 a day. Is it going to be congratulating? That's congratulating you. Like, just like the bat.
Baby steps, the ultimate baby steps.
Back patting thick. Jesus.
I mean, baby steps. I can check how many.
Well, if you're
steps...
taking baby steps, I guess you don't have to do quite so many. Yeah.
How many did I do? So I've done 1,500 today. That was walking the dog. Yesterday, I did. I wasn't wearing my Fitbit. It says I did 110 steps. That's not true.
God,
so, you had a wank
Tuesday,
and then that
I
was
only
it.
Did 586 steps. Barely moved.
Fuck.
Monday, 2,500. I did some more on Sunday. Saturday, I did it. I went for a longer... These are the days I went for longer dog walks. When you can count your steps per day in the hundreds, these are some lazy days, I tell you what. Wow. Yeah Tuesday, shit. I did 586 steps. That's appalling.
You should get a standing desk. Is that thing?
Oh, I
is that
see thing what happened.
You ever do?
I went downstairs to make a cup of tea in the morning, and then I must have walked the dog later in the morning. I think I did some power washing, maybe, and then I just sat around playing video games all day.
Nice.
So I did fuck all. Wowzers.
If you're yelling at stuff, does that trigger
you get
it?
2 hours of exercise a day allotted to you through this quarantine flex? Why aren't you outside running laps for 2 hours straight? Getting all sweaty and stuff
because I'm playing Bannerlords. I can see the exact
Jeez.
Moment actually that the quarantine started because it halved the number of steps or worse. Last week I did nothing. I didn't break 4,000 once. I should do what some people have been doing and running up and down their stairs to simulate climbing Mount Everest.
Right,
people have been doing that in climbing gear. I saw a video of that. People would dress up the climbing gear with the masks and the backpacks and go up and down their stairs as if they're scaling Mount Everest. And if you do enough, it's like, okay, we just made it to base camp. Day two here, you know, of them going up and down their stairs. That's tempting.
Yeah, you should do that.
Yeah. But I could just play Bannerlords.
Or just play Bannerlords. Yeah, I mean, it's the choice is pretty clear.
I can't believe you still playing it.
Oh, man. Good Lord. I'm in love with it. I love that game.
I'm still playing it. I have issues with the game
still. Why? What keeps you going on?
Well, there's parts of it that are actually fun. Like the battles and stuff are quite fun. I just want to create a kingdom, you know? And then...
Have you not done that yet?
Yeah, no, I've created one. I've got a couple of cities and stuff. I just want to see how far I can go with it and then move on. Train station renovation, the game is coming out at the end of this month, so that'll be the next one for me.
Wow, that's
enjoy.
Awesome. Absolutely. I mean, this is Animal Crossing for dads.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Don't lump me in with that shit. I'm not fucking renovating a train station.
You get to fix up the trains and you get to clean up the stations and get it all running again. Stuff perfect.
Yeah, I saw you playing like a tank.
Yeah, that was great too.
Sim or whatever.
Oh, you get like a tip off that there's a old Panzer tank buried in a field in the middle of Poland, and you have to go out, got to drive out there with your equipment, and you got to power wash it and everything, and bring it into the workshop, and like, you know, fucking get all the
rust
off of it.
And then invade Poland with it again. Now it will work.
You got to paint it all up.
Finally.
You got to fix them up and paint them up for your unknown contact who's just asking for all of these old German tanks to be
refurbished. Yeah, we know who that is.
Yeah, we do know. Yeah, it's Randolf Schottler, of course, from Germany. So,
yeah.
I got to eat something. I'm starving, lads.
That was a podcast. Thank you, everyone.
See you next week, where hopefully we won't be just in quarantine talking about this virus. Hopefully. They're saying like 1st of May like is the new sort of like...
We'll see.
Potentially lifting the lockdown sort of thing, but...
We can't go till July. We've got to break out of this shit.
Oh, God, yeah,
it's getting crazy.
Look after yourselves, everyone.
Yeah, take care.
And thinking about
one day
you.
We'll look back on this time and we'll reminisce about it and we'll say, God, do you remember the coronavirus? Oh, that was crazy.
Man.
And everything will be back to normal.
Yes.
And we'll be capitalist slaves once more.
Exactly.
Thank God.
Exactly. Peace. Thank you. Right. See you later.
Peace.
Bye.
Goodbye.